Hey, podcasters out there, this is Eric Hovind. Thanks so much for getting today's episode. You are going to love this conversation between myself and Dr. Louis Marcos, God versus the gods. It's part of a really, really big conversation. I'd love you to listen to the full show. Once you finish this first half on today's podcast, I encourage you to come over to creationtoday.org, become a partner, and enjoy the entire show with us. Can't wait to see you at creationtoday.org. Enjoy today's conversation.
Because Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, but he is also the Savior of the world. When Jesus was incarnated and died and resurrected, if all of those actions only spoke to Jews who knew the Old Testament, but had nothing whatever to say to the Gentiles, then it would seem as if a foreign God had invaded the earth. But in fact, just as Jesus fulfills the Old Testament law and prophets, so he fulfills what I like to call the highest yearnings of the pagan people.
Welcome to the Creation Today Show, where we bring together interviews with experts and solid Bible teaching. Your host, Eric Hovind, affirms the ultimate authority of God's Word, the truth of creation, and why it matters to you.
Do you know what is really going on in our world today? A war is being fought in the heavenly realms, waged right here among humanity on earth. It's a war between the capital G, God, and the little g, gods. In the Hebrew language, the term for God is Elohim. So, what is the truth about this battle of the ages? And how do you and I actually play a role in that battle? Those are two of the big questions we're going to ponder today to better understand how we should live out our days here on earth. Now, while you and I see Russia versus Ukraine or China versus Taiwan or Israel versus Hamas or ISIS or Hezbollah, God sees all of this from a much bigger perspective. The story actually goes back thousands of years. So to discuss it properly, we really need a storyteller, an expert in ancient writing, someone who can see the bigger picture for what it truly is. To do that, ladies and gentlemen, please help me in welcoming the scholar in residence at Houston Christian University, Dr. Louis Marcos. Dr. Marcos, welcome back to the Creation Today Show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me back on, Eric. This is an exciting topic to discuss, and I think an important one as well.
Indeed. I got to tell you, I have listened to your book, The Myth Made Fact, a couple of times. It has been a real eye-opener for me to see a much bigger picture, not only when it comes to ancient mythology, but even to like the creator of the universe who truly speaks and reveals himself to everyone who has ears to hear and eyes to see. And it's really remarkable. Can you tell people real quick about that book, The Myth Made Fact, because it is so good.
It is one of my favorite books that I've written. My family is all from Greece. My grandparents were all born in Greece and immigrated. They live in Tarpon Springs, Florida now. My parents, the Greek sponge docs, not too far away from you all. And so I grew up with Bible stories, but I grew up with Greek mythology as well. And when my children were young, I would tell them Bible stories, but I would also tell them Greek mythology stories. And the kids wondered what was the relationship between the two. And I used to tell them, and it's become a seed of all my evangelism, that Greek mythology is like a candle, but the Bible is like the sun, right? When the sun comes out, we don't turn around and yell at the candle, right? We say, thank you for lighting the way, right? But now that the sun has risen, I can see everything in its fullness. But that doesn't mean that the candle myth is a complete lie. It's a partial truth. It doesn't know about Christ and the incarnation and the crucifixion and the resurrection. But the people that put together these myths, and really it's more a people group that puts together myths than one person, right? And those people, though they did not have access to the Old Testament, to the special revelation of the prophets and the Old Testament, They had what theologians call general revelation. They had access to God's majesty seen in creation, God's holiness seen partly through conscience that God has written on our hearts. God gave them reason. God gave them imagination. God put in all of us, he has written eternity in the hearts of men. And so I believe that if we study these myths, I believe that we are going to find truth that tells us something about the nature of man and something about the nature of God. Again, not perfect, partial, as if we're seeing dimly in a mirror. But I don't believe we're going to see nothing. So I believe one of the reasons that Jordan Peterson has been so successful and so influential on me and other people is because he taps the power of these deep myths. Now, Jordan Peterson is not yet at the full point of accepting the full historicity of Genesis, but he certainly is right about the message and what we can learn from mythology. Now, I write my book, Myth Made Fact, as a full Orthodox believing Christian. And so I can take confidence that if we take these myths and find an element of truth, that we can often draw that truth out so it will find its fullness in Christ. I'd like to put it this way, a rather shocking way to put it, Eric. Christianity is not the only truth. It's the only complete truth.
Wow.
If we say Christianity is the only truth, we risk dropping a wall and saying everything that's not perfect Christianity is a 100% lie, deception, evil. No, there is clearly bits and pieces of truth in all cultures, even all religions, but only in Christ himself do we find truth in its perfect, incarnate, and complete form. Now, what I do in that book, The Myth Made Fact, is I retell 50 myths. Most of them are Greek. Some of them are Roman. Most are Greek. I retell 50 myths in the guise of a storyteller. And then I have a section where I analyze that myth and show the deeper meanings that point to Christ. Then I have a lot of historical background and notes and things like that. And then every chapter has lots and lots of questions that can be used for everybody from, you know, kindergarten to graduate school. I try to do the whole gamut. And so the book can be read devotionally once a week. You can even do family devotions with it. And what's really exciting about the book, Eric, is that for the first time, the publisher asked me to do the audiobook. I'd never done a full audiobook. It's a lot of work, but if you have Audible, you can go there and I get to read it out loud. And they even let me be rather dramatic when I was retelling the story. So this again is a little bit of a manifesto to me. It's part of what I do in books like From Achilles to Christ, Why Christians Should Read the Pagan Classics, From Plato to Christ, How Platonic Thought Helped Shape the Christian Faith, From Aristotle to Christ will be coming out in 2025. So I'm always trying to approach these classics and trying to find the connection, trying to find the common ground that will reveal things to us that we might have missed.
You guys really need to get this book on Audible because, turn my volume.
His own thematic purposes.
You literally
that
get
is to say, there are
Dr. Marcos for, now this is, I mean, I was wondering how long this thing, this is like 11 hours long or 13 hours. I forget the total length of this, but it's not a short read for this. But it's fascinating. I just truly enjoyed this. And it's just one more of the things that helped open my eyes to, there is a bigger picture. God is at work in this world more than I realized in the way that I was brought up. Kind of, and this isn't, I mean, my mom is on here, you know, so this isn't a slap in the face to my parents, but in the Christianity that I was thinking, it was a very narrow niche. And I didn't realize that God is at work. You read the quote from Lewis. I got that here. And you're an expert on Lewis. Lewis said, God is more than a God, not less. Christ is more than Balder, not less. We must not be ashamed of the mystical radiance resting on our theology. We must not be nervous about parallels and pagan Christ. They ought to be there. It would be a stumbling block if they weren't. We must not, in false spirituality, withhold our imaginative welcome. And when C.S. Lewis, when you gave that quote, I went, wow, this is just a much bigger picture than I originally thought that it was. And it helps make me realize, God is not limiting himself in the way he speaks to the world. And so I found this eye-opening, and it continues to open my eyes, especially about our topic today, God versus the gods. So anything else you want to say as I segue into God versus the gods?
Just again, and I'm sure I've said this on your show before, but I used to be troubled, as I'm sure Eric and many of your listeners are. Are you telling me that before Christ came, God simply ignored 99% of humanity? Well, only to the Jews did he speak directly, but he didn't. He was not without a witness, Paul says, but he sent rain on the just and the unjust. God did speak, again, through creation, through conscience, through reason, through imagination. And this is important because Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, but he is also the Savior of the world. And if when Jesus came, we just celebrated Easter, when Jesus was incarnated and died and resurrected, if all of those actions only spoke to Jews who knew the Old Testament, but had nothing whatever to say to the Gentiles, then it would seem as if a foreign God had invaded the earth. But in fact, just as Jesus fulfills the Old Testament law and prophets, so he fulfills what I like to call the highest yearnings of the pagan people. That is, he is the climax of all of human history. Actually, he's the middle of history. The climax will be when Christ comes again. But the coming of Christ, the first coming of Christ, and I get so tired. There are some Christians now, Eric, who use the ridiculous BCE and CE. It gets me sick. And it's a joke anyway, because we all know what it means. But yeah, we need to understand that the coming of Christ divided history in half. And it divided not just the history of the Jews in half, it divided the history of the world in half. Everything is different after Christ came into the world.
Gary, one of our partners, says, I've often wondered about Greek mythology, Zeus and the gang. Was it at least in part the handing down of the generations of the stories of the pre-flood folks who lived 800 to 900 years and were perhaps partly, big, mighty men of old, men of renown? And I want to discuss that, Gary. But yeah, I think a lot goes into that when you understand this bigger picture of what you're presenting in Myth Made Fact. How would you answer this? I've always thought of it as it's just a slight deception that Satan wants to do to move us from worshiping capital G God over to little g God. And both Old and New Testaments record, showdowns, if you will, between capital G God and little g gods. I don't know if you're a teacher, so you may have a better way of navigating how to open this or how to broach this subject, but how easy is it to get off on the right God versus the wrong God? Do you have a thought on that?
I mean, first of all, a good way to think about this is whenever you notice a connection between something pagan, a myth or a ritual or a dying and rising God, and you see a connection between that and Christianity, there's always four ways to read it. One way is to say it's a complete coincidence and ignore it. But we wouldn't be discussing this if we thought everything was a coincidence, right? Yeah. So there's three main ways to do it. One way is to say it is a demonic deception. And I think there are some examples where that may be the case. We need to be really, really careful, right? We have a rise in neo-paganism and Wiccan and all of that going on in our country that can be very, very deceptive. And we do need to be careful, right? But I don't think that's the majority. Another way of reading it is what we might call the liberal theological way. And that's to say, well, because there's a connection, obviously Christianity is just a more refined myth. But the other way to read it is to say that the myth points the way to the fuller reality. And that doesn't even necessarily mean that the writer knew he was doing that. About 40 BC, Virgil, who would later write the Aeneid, wrote a series of 10 eclogues. These are pastoral poems. And in the fourth eclogue, written about 40 BC, he suddenly waxes prophetic and speaks about a child of the gods who will come to earth and bring back the golden age. Now, he was probably speaking about Octavian, who would become Caesar Augustus, but I believe that without him knowing it, the Yahweh, the God of the Bible, was using him to prepare the pagan world for the actual coming of the Son of God into the world to bring peace and unity and a return to what the Greeks called the Golden Age, but what sounds a whole lot like a memory of the Garden of Eden. Right? Because all of those memories of the Golden Age for the Greeks and Romans and other places not only depict a peace, but they depict man in harmony with nature. And remember that when the curse not only cuts God from man and man from man, but it cuts us off from nature. Nature starts producing weeds and nature fights us, and there's a breach that didn't used to be there. A lot of good theologians will say the proper order was God, man, nature, and sin flipped that around. So you end up with nature, man, God, from our point of view. So we do have to have discernment, Eric. There can be a demonic deception. Look, but that even happens in the Old Testament. You remember in the book of Numbers, I think it is, when the Jews are going through the wilderness and they're complaining. And so God sends serpents to bite them and they're dying, right? And then God told Moses, put a brazen serpent, and anyone who looks up to that, which is basically a cross, will be healed. It's an amazing preparation for the gospel. Jesus himself makes the connection when he talks to Nicodemus in John 3. But do you remember what happened to that brazen serpent? People started worshiping it as an idol. I mean, we can make an idol out of anything. We can make an idol out of the Bible. It's called bibliolatry. We can even, wow. Evangelicals, we can particularly fall into bibliolatry, and we need to be careful. So there always needs to be discernment. But a lot of times what we think of as satanic deception is actually part of a spiritual warfare that's been going on since the beginning, right? All Christians are familiar with the revolt of Satan. Most of it we get from Paradise Lost, right? But the Bible makes it pretty clear that there was a figure that rebelled against God and was cast out of heaven, that there was a war in heaven. It's told to us in Revelation. But that's not the only interaction in the spiritual realm. Eric, you began this podcast here by saying the word Elohim, right? Now, the word Elohim means God, but it is a word like sheep that is both singular and plural. So used in the singular of Yahweh, God means the God who was outside time and space and created the world out of nothing. But Elohim can also mean gods. Now, that doesn't mean gods as in deities that are equal to God. It simply means spiritual beings. Yes. And before God created us, before he created the natural world, before he created us human beings, he created spiritual beings. That's clear in the Bible. And those spiritual beings are like God in the sense that they are spirit beings, right? But they are not God, okay? Yeah, in a sense, angels are like us. They're immortal in one direction, but not in both directions. There was a time when they were created. And before he died tragically, the young death of Michael Heiser, I got to go on his podcast three times. It's called The Naked Bible. And I reviewed a book of his called The Unseen Realm. If you go to Gospel Coalition and type in my name, you can probably find my review where I link it to Tolkien and have lots of fun with it. But basically, what Michael Heiser did, right? And we don't have to agree with every single thing he said. I mean, that's like saying you agree with everything N.T. Wright says. I mean, these are men that have written everything, okay? You don't have to agree with every single thing to not accept the basic framework that they're giving us and how helpful it is. And I'm going to just say right now before I dive into this, Eric, that a lot of good Baptists and sort of Reformed Baptists and Presbyterian churches, my church is doing this, and I'm hearing it all over the place where preachers are going through Genesis and their run through is starting with the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent and Cain and Abel, and show how there is a war going on between essentially the children of Seth and the children of Cain. So there's an ongoing, people are starting to understand that, even if they don't get the whole Michael Heiser thing. I most of the good preaching I hear today is making that distinction and understanding that there is a warfare going on. Now, what Michael Heiser adds is that when God created the Elohim, he chose some of those spiritual beings to be part of his divine council. And after he created us, he meant for us, human beings, to be part of that divine council as well. And a lot of good preachers today are talking about how the descriptions of Eden match up with a sort of description of a temple. So Eden was to be the headquarters of this divine council that we would be on along with these spiritual beings. And sometimes when God says we, it may not be a royal we pointing to the Trinity, but it may be a reference to God and the divine council, right? But many of these divine counselors, okay, they started to rebel. Now, we're aware, again, of Satan rebelling, okay? But there are other rebellious Elohim, rebellious spiritual beings, and that's what we read about in Genesis 6, right? It says, when the sons of God looked upon the daughters of men, and they went to them and had relations with them, and they gave birth to the Nephilim, a race of giants. Genesis 6 compares them to the heroes of old. Maybe they are. Maybe there is a real background, not only to maybe Zeus, but to Achilles and Hector and the other Hercules, Jason, Theseus, all of these great, great heroes that we hear story of, Perseus, that we hear stories of in Greek mythology. And I talk about these in my book. So now, when I grew up, and Eric, this might be the same for you. Look, evangelicals are funny people, right? We are people who believe literally every miracle recorded in the Bible. But then when a miracle happens today, we're immediately suspicious. Now, we should always show discernment, okay? We don't just jump at something, right? But so a lot of people just said, well, that can't mean what it says it means because angels are spiritual beings. There's no way they can have offspring with women. Now, that makes a lot of sense, but that's certainly what the passage is saying, that something like this happened. These are the angels that fell. And that is almost surely what 2 Peter is referring to when it says that the angels who sinned, that God locked them up in hell in Tartarus, right, for punishment. And there's also reference to these of this in Jude as well. Jude and 2 Peter particularly have references to these angels who sinned, not just angels who rebelled, but angels who sinned. And so these Nephilim are out there, right? And the flood comes along, not only to wipe out, a very, very depraved humanity, but to wipe out the Nephilim as well. And now, Eric, I don't know if this is true, but it would make a lot of us feel better, right? Because all Christians, we do struggle with what's called the conquest of Canaan. Is this a kind of ethnic cleansing when God says, put them under the ban? Now, again, this is in its infancy, but more research is being done. But you can make an argument that the places where God said, put them under the ban and destroy everything, were places where there were still remnants of the Nephilim. And yes. And many see the last Nephilim could have been Goliath, whom David, the Messianic king, killed. Right? There's obviously something still going on here. And by the way, Michael Heiser makes an argument, and he backs it up with the writings of late Judaism, early Christianity, that what a devil is, are when the Nephilim die, their spirits become demons. And he backs it up with a lot of writings from the first century BC and the first century AD. You don't have to buy all of that, but he makes a pretty compelling case for it. Now, what happens is that you have the flood, right? And still things go bad, right? You have Babel, right? Maybe Nimrod was a Nephilim. But here's the part that's controversial. In Deuteronomy, it talks about God, Yahweh, apportioning the lands to these sons of God, to these yes. Elohim. And yet God keeps for himself Israel or the Holy Land. That, in other words, that is his allotment, his portion. Think now how many times you hear that phrase in the Psalms. This is his allotment or portion. And God entrusted those different lands that would become Assyria, Babylon, Phoenicia, Philistine, all of these things, Philistia, are apportioned to them. And most of them went bad. Most of them misused their authority. And there is the strangest thing about, I have called you sons of God, but you will die like men. This is really hard to read without a supernatural aspect to it, right? In fact, his book, The Unseen Realm, is reclaiming the supernatural sort of undergirding of the Bible. We've left that out. We've lost it. We don't know what to do with it, right? And one more thing, and I'll let you ask another question. Almost all Christians nowadays, you know, there are certain books that people never read but quote all of the time. One of those is called The Secular Age by Charles Taylor. I don't know if anybody's actually read it, but we've all read reviews. And what Charles Taylor says about the difference between our secular age and the past is that in the today, we live in a, in the past, they lived in a porous universe, where today we live in a buffered universe. He's a social scientist, so he comes up with weird words. Thank God C.S. Lewis uses a better jargon. But what he means by that is before the Enlightenment, people, Christians and others, lived in a porous universe. In other words, there was an understanding of a supernatural realm that was coming and going and whatnot, that we were not in a little bubble over here. But since the Enlightenment, even Christians, we tend to live in a buffered world, like this idea that we are buffered from the supernatural realm. We believe it as Christians, right? But we act as if it isn't there. And I would argue, Eric, that I don't know if there are still Elohim watching over specific countries, but most Christians that know about world missions will know that there's an area of the world that we call the 1040 window. It has to do with latitude and longitude, right? And it's the window that includes the Muslim countries and other atheist countries where the persecution of the church is absolutely extreme and where it is very hard for the gospel to reach. And many people, they don't have to be Pentecostals, to believe in what's called praying through the window. That means I'm praying and I'm standing in the gap. That's a phrase that comes from the Bible. That I'm standing in the gap, praying that God will break down the lines of communication within the 1040 window, which seems to have dropped a spirit of darkness over that area. So the spiritual warfare is still real and it's still ongoing. That doesn't mean there's a devil behind every stone. I got to say one more thing and then I'll turn it back to you, Eric.
Okay. I got to take my break here in just one second. Can I tell you what? Hold that thought, because I do have to take a break, and we'll have our creation partners get to hear that thought. Guys, this is like an introduction to God versus the gods, and we're going to continue the conversation for another half an hour. You need to get Dr. Marcos's book, The Myth Made Fact, and you need to let him read that to you. I listen on 1.5 speed, and you're a fast talker already. So, man, I'm like going. I'm loving it. Another resource that would be incredibly helpful for you is the book Fallen, on the Sons of God and the Nephilim at nephilimbook.com. He spends 3 chapters going through the Divine Council, what we're about to talk about, which, by the way, if you want to read it, it's in Psalm 82. We'll read it in the next half of the show. It's in Psalm 82. He spends 3 chapters going through the Divine Council and addressing this. It is well, just those 3 chapters are worth this entire book. And you will get, it's an educational book. He goes through, here's the different views. Here's what different people have believed throughout history. And it is an eye-opener to, especially what Dr. Marcos was talking about. Why would God say kill men, women, and children in this location, but not over here in this location? What's really going on? It's much bigger than you think. Christians, it's time to open our eyes. If you're not saved and you're watching this, there is a real battle taking place. I'd really encourage you to ask God to open your eyes to the spiritual battle taking place. Matter of fact, I'd encourage you to take a free gift at creationtoday.org/gift. creationtoday.org/gift. And just simply go through a free gift that I have for you, telling you the truth about the gospel right there. I've got to let you guys go. Looking forward to next week's program. And by the way, in a couple of weeks, I'll be doing a program called Two Kingdoms that's specifically talking about that. But all of this ties together. Next week's show is called In My Image. No longer are we wanting to be in God's image. We're wanting to be in our own image with the new CEO of Answers in Genesis, Martin Isles. So really looking forward to that conversation, because all of this ends up tying together. Anyway, I've got to let you guys go. I'm over time. God bless you guys. I look forward to seeing you next week. If you want to continue with us on the rest of this conversation, please come over to creationtoday.org, creationtoday.org. And the way it works is you just partner with us to reach people, and you get to enjoy the full conversation and ask our guests questions in the chat on Zoom here. So we'd love to see you over here at creationtoday.org. God bless you. I'll see you next week.